música contemporánea.
La revista de la semana. La OTAN en busca de una nueva guerra fría. La reunión cumbre de los miembros de la OTAN realizada esta semana en Madrid ha lanzado lo que en los hechos puede ser considerado como una declaración de una nueva guerra fría. El blanco principal de esta postura de la OTAN ha sido Rusia, pero China también ha sido mencionada como un desafío. Todo esto apuntando a diseñar un escenario en el que Occidente, o más específicamente Estados Unidos, intenta erigirse en el poder dominante a nivel mundial, mientras trata de alinear a las demás naciones en su propósito de aislar e incluso asfixiar económicamente a Rusia. Sobre esto habría que hacerse algunas preguntas. Primero, ¿por qué producir esta situación de confrontación ahora? Y además, ¿qué efectos va a tener este clima de tensión mundial? Como todo el mundo sabe, el detonante de la actual crisis ha sido la invasión a Ucrania por parte de Rusia, iniciada el 24 de febrero pasado. Sin embargo, los antecedentes de este acontecimiento se remontan a antes, en particular a los problemas internos de Ucrania como ex república integrante de la fenecida URSS. Las tensiones entre quienes procuraron desde el primer momento alinear a ese país a los bloques tanto económicos como militares de Occidente, la Unión Europea y la OTAN, y quienes preferían desarrollar una relación más cercana a Rusia, un país con el cual, aparte de los remanentes de integración existente desde los tiempos soviéticos, comparte similitudes culturales, lingüísticas e históricas. Ucrania devino un estado independiente en 1991, después de la disolución de la Unión Soviética, pero en los años subsiguientes se vio plagada por inestabilidad política y escándalos de diversa índole. En febrero de 2014, después de protestas montadas por sectores pro-occidentales, el presidente Viktor Yanukovych fue removido de su puesto por el Parlamento en lo que podría considerarse un golpe de Estado blando. Yanukovych había descartado entonces buscar asociarse a la Unión Europea. En cambio, había apoyado continuar con los lazos económicos y de integración existentes con Rusia, que se remontaban al tiempo en que ambas repúblicas eran parte de la URSS. En junio de 2014, Petro Poroshenko, con una posición pro-occidental, fue elegido presidente. En marzo de ese año, Rusia había anexado la península de Crimea, poblada mayoritariamente por rusoparlantes. Plagado por acusaciones de corrupción, el gobierno de Poroshenko terminó en descrédito y en 2019 el actor y abogado Volodymyr Zelensky fue elegido presidente. En principio con un programa que era un repudio a lo actuado por los políticos tradicionales. Zelensky eventualmente se vio envuelto en la vieja disputa interna sobre si mirar más a Occidente o conservar una buena relación con Rusia. En el intertanto, la OTAN había estado expandiéndose hacia las cercanías de la frontera rusa, incorporando a exaliados de la antigua Unión Soviética como Polonia, Bulgaria y Rumania, e incluso a ex-repúblicas soviéticas como los estados bálticos, Lituania, Letonia y Estonia. Por cierto, ese expansionismo de la OTAN provocó la airada respuesta rusa. El intento de que Ucrania se incorporara también a la OTAN desató la violenta respuesta rusa, la invasión. Nótese que desde ese momento, lejos de buscar contribuir a una solución pacífica, Estados Unidos y sus aliados han hecho todo lo posible por echar más leña a la hoguera. En definitiva, ha sido el pueblo ucraniano el que más ha sufrido los efectos de una guerra que tiene características brutales por los bombardeos a ciudades que afectan a decenas de miles de civiles. Siempre se ha repetido esa cínica expresión de que la guerra es un gran estímulo para la economía, lo cual es cierto a medias. En un primer momento causa distorsiones que hemos visto en estos días, con una inflación global y serias perturbaciones en la cadena de aprovisionamientos, especialmente de alimentos y bienes de consumo. En lo inmediato también, ciertamente, este conflicto genera enormes ganancias al complejo industrial militar, que comprende no solo la manufactura de armas, municiones y pertrechos militares, sino toda la industria electrónica, la extracción de minerales y combustibles estratégicos también. Bastaría revisar dónde se ubican esos grandes consorcios que operan en estas áreas de la economía de guerra para constatar que la inmensa mayoría se halla en Estados Unidos. En cuanto a los efectos del anuncio hecho por la OTAN y que en la práctica colocaría al mundo de nuevo en medio de una guerra fría, aparte de los países que se hallan en medio de los conflictos, en este caso Ucrania, no debe descartarse que pueda haber otros involucrados en el futuro. Habrá presión a que otros estados se alineen con los aliados de la OTAN. Eso puede ocurrir sin duda con los países latinoamericanos, a los que Estados Unidos siempre ha considerado sus satélites. Por último, un efecto no menos importante en esta nueva Guerra Fría puede golpear directamente a los esfuerzos por contrarrestar lo que ha sido el cambio climático. Por de pronto, la fragilidad en el aprovisionamiento de energía para Europa ha llevado a redoblar la producción petrolera. Incluso Alemania ha planteado reiniciar la utilización de carbón para generar electricidad. Sin duda, una nueva guerra fría en la que los ganadores serán unos pocos grandes consorcios internacionales y en la que los perdedores serán la inmensa mayoría de la población mundial. The Weekly Review. NATO in search of a new Cold War. The summit meeting of NATO members held this week in Madrid has concluded with what can be regarded as the declaration of a new Cold War. The main target of NATO's posturing has been Russia, but China has also been mentioned as a potential challenge. All this aiming at designing a scenario in which the West, or more specifically the United States, tried to set itself up as the dominant power worldwide, while trying to align the other nations in its purpose of isolating and even economically suffocating Russia. A few questions should be asked about this. First, why produce this confrontational situation now? And furthermore, what effects is this climate of global tension going to have? As everyone knows, the trigger for the current crisis was Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which began on February 24th. However, the background to this event goes back to earlier occurrences, in particular to Ukraine's internal problems as a former republic of the defunct USSR. The tensions between those who sought from the outset to align that country with the economic and military blocs of the West, the European Union and NATO, and those who preferred to develop a closer relationship with Russia, a country with which, apart from the remnants of integration existence in Soviet times, it shares cultural, linguistic, and historical similarities. Ukraine became an independent state in 1991 after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, but in subsequent years it was plagued by political instability and scandals of various kinds. In February 2014, after protests mounted by pro-Western sectors, President Viktor Yanukovych was removed from office by parliament in what could be considered a soft coup d'etat. Yanukovych had then ruled out seeking association with the European Union. Instead, he has supported continuing existing economic and integration ties with Russia, dating back to the time when both republics were part of the USSR. In June 2014, Petro Poroshenko, with a pro-Western stance, was elected president. In March of that year, Russia had annexed the Crimean Peninsula, populated mostly by Russian speakers. Plagued by accusations of corruption, Poroshenko's government ended in disrepute, and in 2019, the actor and lawyer Volodymyr Zelensky was elected president, initially with a program that was a repudiation of what was acted by traditional politicians. Zelensky eventually became embroiled in the old internal dispute over whether to look more to the West or preserve a good relationship with Russia. In the meantime, NATO had been expanding closer to the Russian border, incorporating ex-allies of the former Soviet Union, such as Poland, Bulgaria, and Romania, and even former Soviet republics, such as the Baltic states of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. Incidentally, this NATO expansionism provoked an angry Russian response. The attempt to bring Ukraine into NATO also triggered the violent Russian response, the invasion. Note that since that time, far from seeking to contribute to a peaceful solution, the United States and its allies have done everything possible to add fuel to the fire. In the end, it has been the Ukrainian people who have been suffered the most from the effects of a war that has brutal characteristics due to the bombardment of cities affecting tens of thousands of civilians. The cynical expression that war is a great stimulus for the economy has always been repeated, which is only half true. Initially, it causes distortions that we have seen in recent days with global inflation and serious disruptions in supply chains, especially for food and consumer goods. In the immediate term, too, this conflict certainly generates enormous profits for the military-industrial complex, which includes not only the manufacture of weapons, ammunition, and military equipment, but also the entire electronics industry and the extraction of strategic minerals and fuels. It will suffice to review the location of the large consumptions operating in these areas of the war economy to see that the vast majority of them are located in the United States. as for the effects of the announcement made by NATO, which in practice will place the world once again in the middle of a Cold War, apart from the countries in the middle of the conflicts, in this case Ukraine, it should not be ruled out that there could be others involved in the future. There will be pressure for other states to align themselves with NATO allies. This can certainly happen with Latin American countries, which the United States had always considered its satellites. Last but not least, a no less important effect of this new Cold War may hit directly at efforts to fight climate change. For one thing, the fragility of Europe's energy supply has led to a redoubling of oil production, and Germany has even considered restarting the use of coal to generate electricity. Undoubtedly, a new Cold War in which the winners will be a few large international corporations and the losers will be the vast majority of the world's population. Good day.
será mi piel junto a tu piel, cardo, ceniza, ¿cómo será? Si he de fundir mi espacio frente al tuyo, ¿cómo será tu cuerpo al recorrerme ahí? ¿Cómo mi corazón si estoy de muerte? Mi corazón si estoy de muerte. Se quebrará mi voz cuando se apague, de no poderte hablar en el oído, y quemará mi boca salivada de la sed que me queme si me besas, de la sed que me queme si me besas. ¿Cómo será el gemido y cómo el grito al escapar mi vida entre la tuya y cómo el letargo al que me entregue cuando adormezca el sueño entre tus sueños? Han de ser breves mis siestas, mis esteros despiertan con tus ríos, pero cómo serán mis despertares, pero cómo serán mis despertares. Pero cómo serán mis despertares cada vez que despierte avergonzada, cada vez que despierte avergonzada.
Vamos ahora al fichero latino de hoy, 3 de julio de 2022. Anuncios de interés público. Dosis de refuerzo de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la segunda vacuna de refuerzo o cuarta dosis para mayores de 18 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé, en francés o en inglés. Eventos. Ceremonia de entrega del premio Oliver Jones por parte del Festival Internacional de Jazz de Montreal a Cristina Baudrier Cárdenas, quien luego de la ceremonia hará una presentación musical especial. Esto es el sábado 9 de julio a las 18 horas en el estudio TD, ubicado en el 305 Saint Catherine Oeste, Metro Place des Arts. Entrada gratuita. Publicaciones. En las ediciones en francés e inglés del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence, Présence chilienne en la Belle Provence, Chilean Presence en la Belle Provence, se hallan a la venta en la librería de la Université de Montréal en el 3200 Jean Brian, en la librería Bertrand, es en el 430 Saint-Pierre, en el Viejo Montreal, en el Internet, en la cadena Renaud Bray, en la librería Argos, en el 1841 A, Saint Catherine Oeste, y en la librería Paragraph 2220 McGill College Avenue. Precio $10 más impuesto. El tiempo para hoy. Según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá, soleado con una temperatura máxima de 25 grados. Para esta noche periodos de nubosidad con una mínima de 17 grados. Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tiene alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, comuníquese con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica laplaza.info@gmail.com. O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook, pues visítenos en el www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook. Y Tiempo Latino se ha escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del Internet. Entre al sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca. Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
Sepan todos a quién tú perteneces. Con sangre de mis venas te marcaré la frente para que te respeten aún con la mirada y sepan que tú eres mi propiedad privada, que no se atreva nadie a mirarte con ansias y que conserven todos respetable distancia, porque mi pobre alma se retuerce de celos y no quiero que nadie respire de tu aliento, porque siendo tu dueña no me importa más nada que verte solo mío, mi propiedad privada, que verte solo mío, mi propiedad privada. Que sepan todos a quién tú perteneces. Con sangre de mis venas te marcaré la frente para que te respeten aún con la mirada y sepan que tú eres mi propiedad privada, que no se atreva a nadie a mirarte con ansias y que conserven todos respetable distancia, porque mi pobre alma se retuerce de celos y no quiero que nadie respire de tu aliento, porque siendo tu dueña.
Y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next, The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
This is Amanda Dawn Christie telling you that if you're interested in radio, AM, FM, shortwave, amateur radio, pirate broadcasting, and more, you won't want to miss the International Radio Report every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at ckut.ca.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Sunday, July the 3rd, and we wish all our American friends a happy 4th of July coming up tomorrow. And here in Canada, we're still celebrating July 1st yes. Weekend, making a long weekend out of it. So I know there's a lot of tourists in town. The Jazz Fest is going on in Montreal, so it's a busy time, and we're getting that typical humid weather starting up here in Montreal. So it's a good time to be here. So we say hello to anybody that might be visiting from out of town as well. My name's Sheldon. I'm here with Jill. We are here every Sunday morning with 30 minutes of news and information from the world of radio. You can reach us by email, radioreport@yahoo.com. Our show is live streaming and archived on the website of CKUT Radio in Montreal, ckut.ca. Our Facebook page is International Radio Report. We welcome Rodney, Nico, Joseph, and Rodney, two Rodneys this week, 806 members. And our YouTube channel, which you can find, International Radio Report, has 659 subscribers. And you can find past editions of our show there, including a new show each week, not too long after you hear it on the air. So we will get going with a few interesting stories from around the world this week, starting off over in France, where there's some interesting developments on both the TV and radio scene.
Yep, so French TV and radio stations strike over plan to end the license fee. This is by Emma Morgan, The Connection, and via Mike Terry and Glenn Hauser's World of Radio. Staff at France Télévisions and Radio France went on strike on June 28th in protest against plans to scrap the Contribution pour l'Audiovisuel, a public license fee. The fee, also called the Redevance Audiovisuelle, currently funds France Télévisions, France 2, France 3, France 5, Radio France, France Inter, France Info, France Culture, France Musique, and the art and international media such as France 24 and Radio France International. One of President Emmanuel Macron's re-election pledges was the elimination of the Redevance Audiovisuelle, which cost around 23 million metropolitan French households 138 euros a year. Precise details of the move to scrap the fee have yet to be fully clarified, but a law containing the legislation for it is expected to be put to Parliament now that MPs have begun their terms following the legislative elections. This plan is viewed by opponents as a threat to the independence of the channels in question. It has also raised concerns over funding of French television and radio stations. Some 3.2 billion euros of the 3.8 billion euros which goes into funding these organizations comes from the redevance. The remaining 600 million euros being provided by the state to make up for the non-payment of the most deprived households. The government has said that by the end of the license fee will not lead to a drop in funding, but it is unclear where the money will be sourced if not from viewers and listeners. Unions have also said that eliminating the redevance means impoverishing and jeopardizing public audiovisual media by shifting it into the state's general budget and therefore making it vulnerable to arbitration and incessant political pressures. The prospect of the dismantling of these public services for the benefit of the private sector where media moguls rule is unbearable. It is with regards to the level of independence and the quality of information shared by the media that we measure the maturity of a democracy. A 2021 American study on the state of media in 23 different countries has shown that significant investments in news organizations, in addition to structures designed to protect their political and economic independence, is conducive to a healthy democracy. The strike has meant that music replaced the usual morning programs on radio stations such as France Info, France 2 was showing repeats. The strike is led by CGT, CFDT, and many other different unions, with a demonstration expected at midday in Montparnasse, Paris. Protesters will head in the direction of the Assemblée Nationale. France Info website operations will also be disrupted, as those of France 24. Unions are calling for a universal tax for audiovisual media, which will be at least equal to the current amount, as well as dedicated funding to fight against fake news. Well, that resumes in a few things. What I always say when we start thinking of media, of news, and of news outlets, of radio stations and TV as a dollar amount, it's always a huge problem, because we need to have these going alive and well, because we need to have fair sources of news. It is interesting because here in North America, we are not used to that, thinking that, you know, you're going to pay a fee for a license to have media or radio and have to do that. So, it was like a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the BBC also with their license fee removal. I mean, it seems to be something that is going on in many countries. And then where does the money come from after that?
Yeah, I think we're not really used to something like that. We have the one national network, which is in English and French, both radio and television. But the rest of the networks across the country are all independently owned broadcasters. So we're not familiar. I mean, CBC Radio-Canada is paid for by us, but it's indirectly. We're not being given a bill to pay every year. It is paid for from tax dollars. So, you know, it's coming out of one big pot rather than being specifically tagged, you know, to each individual. But this is something that's much more common in other countries. So we're seeing two of the major ones, Britain and France, both looking, changing up that system and like that, and maybe a few little trinkets or souvenirs from the station. Well, that's something that's gone by the wayside with a lot of stations, cost, postage costs, staffing issues, that sort of thing. There are still some stations that do QSL, but what's become a new tool for QSL hunters is EQSLs or electronic QSLs is something that's showing up in the ham radio world. Well, now it's starting to show up with some of the broadcasters as well. And Chris Greenway, who's with BBC, I believe, via Glenn Hauser's World of Radio, is reporting that the BBC is now accepting online reception reports and issuing EQSLs. So there is a website, eqsl.tools.bbc.co.uk, and we'll put that link on our Facebook page for you. Now, I took a look at it, and we were talking about it before the show. It does look like it's sort of a robot operation. You file your report online, and some people were saying they were getting the answer back, the EQSL, quite quickly. It does seem to be some sort of automated system. I don't know if that means the reports are actually being checked or not, or you send a report and it just automatically fires off a report, an EQSL for you.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to try to
get
one with a fake report and see if it actually verifies anything, because they could kind of just verify frequencies and times if they match.
I forget exactly how much detail they're putting into the card as well. I'm not sure. Are they putting the transmitter site and all of that, or is that up to you to input that?
I think that's us to input that, but no, that's interesting. I'm going to have to try it. I'm going to get an EQ. I got the real QSLs for those that, unfortunately... I'm sorry. I know you guys are jealous of that, but
yeah, but ours have dust on them. They go way back.
Yes, yes, they do.
From when we were able to get cards from so many of the stations, but
it's interesting.
Yeah, things change.
Because there's one thing that I wonder about this is, why take the time to do this? And I was wondering if, just out of curiosity, they didn't do it just because it's a measure of audience in some way.
That's possibly one thing, and probably one thing, I would think, and maybe just a little bit of PR, audience relations sort of thing. If it's something that they can do very easily without much cost associated with it, then, you know, it'll keep some people happy. Anyways, nice to see that they've done something. You know, it's more than some stations are doing right now. So
absolutely.
If you're a fast food junkie, you might be very worried about the headline in this story. It says chip shortage. No, Frito-Lay's is not gone on strike. We're not talking about potato chips here. We're talking about computer chips and electronic chips. So the headline, chip shortage likely to cause low Texan inventory. This coming from the SW Elling blog. This is Tom Witherspoon's site. It says, I received a message from a reader recently regarding the Texan PL330 radio, shortwave radio. They pointed out that Texan listed the PL330 as discontinued, but I've confirmed that this is not the case. This is simply a poor translation or choice of words. The PL330 is still very much in production. However, I also learned the global chip shortage is hitting Texan and most other radio manufacturers quite hard right now. I checked with Anna at Anonco, and she confirmed that they still have inventory of the PL330 and other Texan models, but the chip shortage will almost certainly affect radio availability once her existing inventory is depleted. I'm not sure any of us would be surprised to learn this because the chip shortage is having impact across multiple industries, and modern DSP shortwave receivers are very chip dependent. I follow economic news pretty closely, and most experts agree that the chip shortage may create issues for the next year or even two. Indeed, there's even a shortage of chips to make chips. No worries and no need to panic, though, as we'll all get through this. I would suggest not waiting to bite the bullet if you've been planning to purchase a new DSP-based portable radio in the near future. So, Gilles, you're a techie computer guy. I guess you can give a little more background into this.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, these radios, most radios today, actually, almost, I'd say in 80% of the receivers you can buy online, the portables, have a DSP-based chip. The radio has a little integrated circuit that is a full radio within a chip, and that has been kind of the basics of most receivers lately, as it probably makes these receivers less expensive, and they perform really well. Now, of course, every type of electronics is having problems with chip. If you buy a computer, you'll see that maybe your favorite computer is not going to be available. Now we see it hit with radio. There are manufacturers, also other manufacturers, that did discontinue some models of receivers because they just couldn't get the parts. So ICOM was hit, C-Crane is hit also with a couple of models that they discontinued just because can't get parts and can't even get parts to get them fixed if it breaks down. So it's having an impact, and it's interesting, you know, apparently, according to some people, there shouldn't be any shortwave radio sold out there because nobody's listening. But I guess, you know, people must be buying them because there's going to be maybe a shortage.
Yeah. You know, there should be a whole bunch of stock sitting around, you know, that's been there for years because nobody would want them. But we seem to think that's not necessarily the case. And I think we'll get to a story in the second half here that may prove some of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's been some interesting propagation, and you had some interesting results from it as well.
Yep. I actually this week had the opportunity to hear a station on FM from Orlando, Florida. And, you know, I'm living in Montreal, Canada, so that's kind of far away for the FM band. You know, I've tried the FM band to DX in the past. I've never had anything else than maybe a couple of hundred kilometers of distance from sometimes when there's tropospheric ducting, stuff like that. And it all started with one little detail. I was listening to 107.9, the WVPS station out of Burlington, Vermont. And every 15 to 20 minutes, for 20 to 30 seconds, there was some pop music overpowering the station and then going away. So I thought that was kind of curious. Then I go on the Facebook group and I see somebody mentioning that he finds that there's some weird, funky propagation going on FM. He never heard stations further away than about 100 miles. Now he's hearing a station that's 1,000 miles away. I was curious. I had to turn on my radio and start tuning around. It's a little tough in Montreal because we don't have a lot of spaces where there's empty static just, you know, to get any stations. There's too many stations in the band already. Plus, you need a good radio in Montreal because all the stations are so powerful that most radios actually don't work well to DX. So my Sangean HDR-14 is pretty good at it. It's that little HD radio that I purchased a couple of years ago. And I start tuning around and I hear some stations, but on 96.5, I hear salsa music. And then I hear Spanish. And on the display, the RDS display says WOEX Orlando. And I'm super impressed. And at times, it came in for 3 to 4 minutes at a time, super clear, like if it was a local station here in Montreal. And all of that faded away about 30 to 45 minutes after I heard the station.
Welcome to the world of sporadic e-skip.
Yep.
The time that is right, the weather is right. There's lots of factors that kick this into gear. And often, even though if your band is crowded, sometimes, like you said, the Vermont public radio station is very strong here in Montreal. Yet when e-skip is intense, it can even black out local radio stations, and you'll have distant stations right on top of your existing stations if the propagation is intense enough. Yep. So, it was a good period for it. I had to scramble to try to find a good radio on FM, though. I don't have really good ones for FM. I need to get into my car. That's my best FM radio, is the one in the car. And it has the RDS that IDs the station that pops up on the screen. So that's really helpful, too. That's a tool that, you know, we didn't maybe have in the past that certainly helps when you're picking up these long-distance FM stations.
There are kind of two periods that are good for e-skip, and of course the summer solstice, and around the Christmas season, the winter solstice, are the two times where we can, but try it anytime, because sporadic e-skip can happen any time of the year, and that's why they call it sporadic.
There are a couple websites that people monitor and post up messages. We'll put some links up on our Facebook page where you can go and check those out, and, you know, just periodically go and look and see if there's activity, and then, you know, get to your radio, and you know, you might get lucky. Sometimes it'll last for a long time. Sometimes it's very short. It can sometimes go way up in the band, like you mentioned, some effect on 107.9. Sometimes it's down below that, like if you'll see it in the low VHF, 30 to 50 megs on 6 meters as well. So it's a really neat phenomena when it happens. Yep. You just got to be in the right place at the right time for it.
One easy website to remember if you want to try it and see if something's happening, check out dxmaps.com. You have maps and you have different frequencies and bands, and you can see the activity on VHF range. It's really nice. So if you see that 6 meters has activity all over the place, and including where you live on the map, you can try the FM DXing. It might work, actually. So DXmaps. And what was happening with our sun, and by the way, sporadic e-skip is independent from the sun. It's another type of phenomena that happens when that happens. So our sun is rather quiet. There's three sunspot groups right now. Sunspot number at 40. Solar flux just below 100, so things have been quiet this week. There's been a little bit of geomagnetic activity. There was a geomagnetic storm on Tuesday, I believe. And we see that the sun is very active, but on the far side, there are several coronal mass ejections that have been visible. So maybe things are going to pick up in the next week or so. And there is a little solar wind from a northern coronal hole that could actually reach the Earth on July 6th. That could also create some instabilities in your radio listening experience. But you know what? Propagation is quite good. And there's only one way that you can really see what's happening or hear what's happening, and it's to turn on the radio and listen.
This is Janice of Dorval. The International Radio Report presents 30 minutes of news, information, and commentary on developments in the world of radio every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and online at ckut.ca.
Our next story, Gilles, you came across this article. It is from a gentleman named Tom Kent. It was an original work published by the Information Professionals Association, and they say a disclaimer: opinions expressed by authors are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of or endorsement by the Information Professionals Association. I've never heard of that association to begin with, but it's quite an interesting story. It's very lengthy. We're not going to read through the whole thing. We will post up a link to it so you can read the whole thing, but we'll try to sort of summarize it for you. And it starts off by saying, as Vladimir Putin tightens his stranglehold on what his citizens see and hear, will radio once again become an effective way to get outside voices into Russia? I think we already know that that's true.
Yes.
And this article goes into a lot of detail as to what's currently happening and what could be happening if people realized what they could do, and in some cases, doing it in a very affordable manner.
They are actually mentioning one of the U.S. agencies, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, that runs a lot of the shortwave outlets that are around the world. And there's a lot of money being pumped into that agency for things like Radio Free Asia, for example, or Radio Free Europe. And they're surprised that there's kind of a refusal on the part of that agency to put any shortwave outlets towards Russia or Ukraine. And they're mentioning that it costs $100 per hour and even less for them to have a program out, which is such a small amount when you think of the big budget that they have. And they are wondering why the agency itself doesn't seem interested. They have the impression, actually, the agency did reply back many times that they think that nobody's listening. And yet, they are mentioning, like, there's the Trans World Radio broadcaster, which is a religious broadcaster, that kind of mentioned at some point where they get hundreds of letters from Russia. And, you know, we were talking before the recording about there's numbers here. If you get a letter from a listener, we know that there's very few people that take the time to write. So if you get a letter, there's definitely more people than that letter. So hundreds of letters, there's at least thousands, if not tens of thousands of listeners. There's some equation in there.
They mention how many people are really out there to listen. 1% of Russian households, for example, with shortwave radios, works out to about 55,000 families in a nation of 144 million. Russia probably has 25,000 to 35,000 amateur radio hobbyists. They obviously have shortwave equipment for their ham radio. An unknown number of people probably still listen occasionally to shortwave stations from around the world. Inexpensive radios with shortwave bands can be easily bought online from Russian dealers. So, you know, this goes against some of the information that's being circulated out there of, you know, there are nobody out there with radios anymore and nobody's buying radios. They're, you know, why waste your time putting these programs on radio, on shortwave? We had a story last week of how AM transmitters are being shipped into the war zones to get stations back on the air for people who are, you know, maybe living without electricity, without water, without what have you, because of the situation in Ukraine. They may have a small portable radio with them, you know, and probably an AM, FM. And if the AM stations are put on the air with these transmitters, they have a much greater range than the FM stations. So you potentially could reach a lot more people with some of these AM broadcasts.
Many of them have been reactivated. Even Ukraine reactivated what they had shut down a few years ago on medium wave. And they're saying here, you know, AM radio signals can travel for a thousand miles or more at night, particularly. So you can actually send that news across the border when inside the border it's not possible to get the same news over the internet, where they've blocked off, you know, Russia's blocked off pretty much everything that talks against the Vladimir Putin. So, you know, to get real news, you need a radio. It's almost the minimum requirement. You know, they say here, for shortwave, the WRMI general manager, Jeff White, said stations has received messages from listeners in Russia and Ukraine indicating that the signals are getting through. So there are listeners.
Yeah. Now, we had talked in the past about a station, well, a shortwave venture called Radio Truth for Russia, had been launched by Russian-speaking activists based in Europe. Government broadcasters in Taiwan, Romania, Japan, as well as the Vatican are also on shortwave to Russia. But there was an independent group that was raising money through a GoFundMe. Now, they've run out of money, and they were purchasing airtime to put actually Voice of America programming on shortwave using WRMI's shortwave transmitter site in Miami, Florida. Nice to hear that even though the money is run out, that Jeff White at the station, the general manager of WRMI, has decided to continue some of those broadcasts on his own dime, basically.
I think it's an indication that he also believes that people are listening and that it's needed to have these outlets so that the news gets through.
Yeah, and you know, we never know how many people are listening to any broadcast, really. So, you know, if it doesn't cost a lot and you have the ability to put it out there, why not do it?
Absolutely.
You know, so anyways, I think you'll find this article really, really interesting. There's a lot more to it that we don't have time to go into all of it here today, but we'll put up the link for it. You can have a read of it and do feel free to comment on it as well. We love to hear from you, you know, your opinions and your feelings on the situation.
So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
We certainly do. We have contests going on over the weekend. The 13 Colonies stations are on the air as we speak, and I happened to hear a few of them this morning out of the U.S. We have Canada Day contest has been running stations on the air for that. We're on July 1st. So we hope some of you had a chance to hear some of those. But coming up, we got a couple contests for you. Coming up on July 9th and 10th, 1200 Zulu to 1200 Zulu, July 9th to the 10th, organized by the International Amateur Radio Union and the American Radio Relay League, is the IARU HF World Championships. The objective is to support amateur self-training in radio communications, including improving amateur operating skills, conducting technical investigations, and intercommunicating with other amateurs around the world, especially IARU member society headquarter stations. So they'll be operating 1.8 through 28 megahertz ham bands. The modes, both phone and CW, may be used. For the contest, you're asked to contact stations only once per band and mode.
There's the Straight Key Century Club that is having the weekend sprintathon, 12 Zulu July 9th to 23:59 Zulu July 10th. Participants may sprint on 160 to 6 meters, excluding the work bands. Mode is CW.
And finally, the QRP Amateur Radio Club International is organizing the Summer Home Brew Sprint. It's just 3 hours long, 2000 to 2300 Zulu, July 10th, 160 through 10 meters. It's CW, Morse code only, but also only QRP, so low-powered stations only.
Lots of stuff to listen to, and we are out of time.
We certainly are. We thank you for tuning in. As we said at the beginning, have a good holiday weekend, July 4th coming up in the U.S. Tune the bands. There could be a lot of pirate activity.
Lots of pirates, yes.
Any major holiday seems to bring the pirates out, so check all the usual spots for that. And there should be, you know, special programming coming up for some of the events, some other ham stations that will be operating for special events throughout as well. So have fun with your radio and drop us a note. Tell us what you've been listening to or any comments you have on the stories. Would be great to hear from you. Radioreport@yahoo.com if you want to use email. And our Facebook group, International Radio Report. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Sunday for the next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Bye-bye. The following is a previously broadcast program.